Good morning, everyone. This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry here in New York. Todd Zwillick down in Washington and for Celeste for one more day. Good morning, Todd.
Hi, good morning, John.
So we've been looking at the middle class all week because President Obama is looking for the middle class. Where
sure
is he today?
Is. Iowa first in the morning and then to Virginia for another one of his backyard sit-downs with normal middle class families. By the way, it's not a campaign event. It's just
right.
Talking to the middle class, right?
Well, but if he wants to talk to the middle class, maybe the president should hop on Air Force One and fly over to Shanghai or maybe Hong Kong or possibly Mumbai or Bangalore or any of the places in South Asia where there appears to be very much of a middle class growing, not struggling, as we've been describing all week long here on The Takeaway. If you have a story about why you are or not in the middle class, give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE, 877-869-8253, or go to the website, takeaway.org. We've been talking with lots of people who are defining themselves as middle class or not. And we decided, because some economists suggested that the middle class has been outsourced to China and India, largely because there are people with lots of cash, with aspirations to move economically from one stratum to the next, and those populations are definitely growing, even in the midst of this recession. And so to talk about this, we've asked Vishakha Desai, president of the Asia Society, to join us. We are thrilled to have her with us. Good morning, Vishakha.
Good morning. Delighted to be here.
And from half a world away, Adil Ibrahim recently moved to Mumbai, India, from Hong Kong. He works for an investment asset firm, and he's on the line from his office in Mumbai. Adil, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
So, Vishakha, let's talk about this premise that the middle class is both growing and alive and well, and actually resembles the American middle class of, say, the 1950s, in the sense that it's growing, and there are suddenly lots and lots of options in places like India and China that didn't exist before. Vishakha?
Well, I think, firstly, we have to remember that it's growing because this is still in the early stages of the development. So that, for example, in China, today we might say there are about 290 million in middle class. Of course, they're not going to make the money in absolute dollars that Americans make. But in purchase power parity terms, it really comes out to be pretty good lifestyle. And in 2025, this number in China alone will grow to about 500 million people. So just imagine. And their income level will change in about tenfold. This is true in India as well. So you really have just sheer numbers of people who have aspirations to buy, who right now have capacity to buy modestly. But within 10 years, they're going to go into another income level at a rate that we have never seen in the world ever before.
Wow. I mean, populations that exceed the entire population of the United States, to just give you a sense of the scale, or at least
exactly.
Maybe even double. That's Vishakha Desai, president of the Asia Society. Adil Ibrahim in Mumbai, since you have experience in both Hong Kong and in India, what is the social mobility for new aspirants to the middle class or new arrivals in the middle class? And how have India versus China done at making sure that people can move from one place to the other?
Well, I mean, you know, you can see it in people's spending patterns in terms of their increase in disposable incomes. Now, you know, you can compare, you know, say 10 years ago to where we are today. For example, let's look at the mobile phone sector, for example. Here in India, you're adding about 10 million subscribers a month, which is, you know, what China was doing for several years. If you look at, cars, you look at motorbikes, you look at insurance products, you look at actual mobile phones itself, you can see just the fact that these consumers that are evolving into the middle class are getting higher disposable incomes that they're using to spend on these goods and services. And then these companies are heavily marketing all across the country. So, cars, for example, there's about 1 million a month. Motorbikes, 1.5 million a month. We're coming across guys who are running small chemist stores who own two Blackberries. Hey, these guys are probably earning about $2,000, $3,000 a year, and he spent $600 buying two Blackberries. So we can see it on the streets. So we can see the whole change in spending patterns that's evolved over the last 10 years as disposable incomes have increased.
Adil, you see it on the streets, but my question is, do people there self-identify as middle class? You know, we've been talking all week about what are Americans' ideas about middle class. They have all kinds of ideas. Well, I make more money, or my wife can afford to stay home, or I have leisure time. Does the term middle class exist there, or people just say, I want to be richer?
It's probably more the latter in terms of how people go about in terms of identifying themselves. For example, in Hong Kong, there was a very clear distinction between sort of, you know, lower class, middle class, and upper class. And I guess everyone knew where they stood. People hung out in certain circles and in certain areas, and it would be abundantly clear where you were. But here in Mumbai, it's just completely all mixed up. You actually don't know. I mean, you could take a train.
Wait a minute.
A lot of people use a train.
Adil, you know, yeah. You're upper class, right?
Pardon?
You're upper class, right, Adil?
No, I mean, in Hong Kong, I'm middle class. When I'm here, people may look at me and consider myself as being upper class, but I'm not. In terms of the income levels, I'm definitely middle class.
Wow. That's interesting. Vishakha Desai, we don't have a whole lot of time, but, gosh, this is a fascinating discussion. You know, in India and China, the success of the middle class is sometimes described as a sobering fact that might lead to political instability, particularly in China, as expectations rise, while we in America view the happy middle class as a sign of a political sort of peace and quiet. Why would a growing middle class be worrisome to politicians in Asia?
Well, I think that there is an assumption, because China is not a fully democratic country, that as people begin to have more things, that they want to have more freedom. And that freedom would therefore lead to more sense of tension, because the government obviously doesn't want it. I think that that particular idea actually does not seem to hold anymore. We all used to talk about this about 5 years ago. But today, what we see is that people are actually self-censoring. And yes, there's a huge amount of Twitter and other kind of clandestine things online that are going on, but there's a tremendous amount of self-censorship that people actually take on themselves. So today, we have to realize that the model that we all have used, that once you get food in your stomach, once you're happy, that actually you want to have, quote-unquote,
right,
democracy.
Interesting. Vishakha Desai, president of the Asia Society, talking about the middle class in Asia. And Adil Ibrahim, he moved to Mumbai from Hong Kong, joining us from Mumbai, where he's an investment asset manager. Thanks so much to both of you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.